So the floor is open to questions. Okay. Marianne, somebody give you a microphone.
This is Marianne Angel from Los Alamos, US. I have a question for the second paper. Do you assume in your algorithm that you have PMU measurements at each node in your network? And I was curious if you know how the performance of your algorithm degrades as you reduce the number of PMU measurements, and also as you play with the amplitude of the noise that you inject in your network. For example, you can estimate the number, the percentage of misses in detecting voltage or topology events, and how that depends on the number of PMU measurements and on the noise level. And of course, implicitly here is a notion of how do you locate your PMU measurements in order to maximize the performance of your algorithm.
If I understand correctly,
you have to state your name also.
Okay.
Because the National Security Administration
is a government. Okay. My name is Jungmin from University of Wisconsin. If I understand correctly, you are questioning about the number of PMUs in the network. Actually, I did a test for the voltage stability assessment, and the overall quality is a little bit degraded, but is still reasonable. It is not very significant degradations over there. But the project detection, there should be a lot of PMU data should be installed in order to define the location where the topology change happens. And it also impact the, there is something happens, we can find that there is something happens in the network. It may not be captured if the number of PMU data is not enough in the system. So, this is a pretty good question. We have thought about that for the last year, and we haven't came up with good algorithm for the PM placement for the topology detection. But stability assessment itself, it can be a pretty reasonable estimation is possible with the restricted number of PMUs.
Thank you. See. Professor Canizares, is hand up.
Claudio Canizares, University of Waterloo. I have exactly the same question. So, could you specifically
I'm
say?
Sorry, what we is, don't allow the same questions.
Could you specifically say what is the minimum number of PMUs you require for this? Do you assume that you have it everywhere?
Oh yeah, for the simulation result, we assume that the PMU is installed everywhere in the system. But for as I mentioned earlier, the voltage stability assessment is possible with very with limited number of PMUs.
How many?
We tested with 10% of the number of buses in the system, which means if it is 118 bus system, we tested with 12. PMUs, and it still give us a very reasonable assessment for the voltage stability.
Okay, I saw Bernie was up.
A quick question Bernie Lassier, University of Wisconsin. Quick question for Jungmin and then one for Misha. Jungmin, you showed all these plots where you could see interesting things in the singular values that they change as things happen in network. Can you comment on the discrimination possibilities? How well can you discriminate between the events that are voltage related and those that are just line switches? That didn't seem to come out.
You mean the, in the slide I mentioned the signal to noise ratio, you mean that the signal to noise ratio or?
When you see changes in the singular
values, how do you know what type of event it is?
what type of advantages?
So is it a line just switched out, or is it a voltage problem?
Oh, yeah, it cannot be discriminated from the PMU measurement only. But if we look at, let's see.
They have a non-discriminatory policy.
Okay, they don't discriminate, that's fine.
It is a little bit hard to distinguish line out or voltage compensation or voltage down or something. But if we get the left singular vector associated with the largest singular value, it may possible to distinguish a little bit, but for now, I'm pretty doubted about it. It's hard to distinguish between those two elements.
Okay, thank you. And I'd like to ask Misha a question. First, I'll say I really like this work and this type of work, so then you know I'm going to follow up with a nasty question. So a couple things. So one is the modeling question. So you propose using this model that's lossless and has constant voltages, but that seems entirely based on mathematical convenience. So the first question I might want to ask about that, what is the hope that you can extend it to more detailed models? Secondly, before we even get to that, so that should be the that, I'm confused that you can, if that's all you need is lossless and constant voltage, to be able to construct a convex model for this. I'm fairly certain I've seen in the literature specific examples that meet that, that are demonstrably not convex. So I don't quite know if there's more to your assumptions than that. Is there anything else, neglecting reactive power or doing something else beyond that? Or is your claim all you're doing is lossless and constant voltage?
Misha Chertkov, Los Alamos. Thank you, Bernie, for very good questions. So first on hopes for further generalizations. Yes, of course, we need, well, there are multiple directions where we want to go and plan to go. So voltage is not the only one. Voltage, as I think we discussed with you before, voltage is pretty local phenomenon, right? And we probably are okay setting voltages appropriately and maybe iterating again. More importantly, our assumption about this criterion which we use for synchronization, well, we basically saying that we monitor synchronization by a certain auxiliary variable. And we limit ourselves in this assumption to existence of solution. And not to, so you may have perturbation, and then even though you have solution, but you'll not get there, you'll start sliding, right? So that's not accounted in this type of approach which we have. So we want to account for region of attraction. So that's probably most interesting extension. So now that's to the first question. Second, the fact that. Well, first of all, I would like to see this paper. but general remark, the fact that in this paper there is a statement that problem is not convex, it doesn't mean that there is no convex reformulation. We know multiple situations when smart change of variables and, you know, work. So now a little bit in between those two questions, there is extra thing. If you'll want me to account for reactive power constraints, yes, I don't account for them either. So, and yes, you're right, yeah. So there are multiple things which you're not accounting for, and just one step at a time, I guess.
Okay, Janusz?
Janusz Białek, Durham University. A question to Misha. Maybe I have misunderstood, but I'm just about two of the assumptions behind your methodology. The first, you said that you have some Gaussian distribution. And if it is wind does not follow Gauss distribution, it follows Weibull distribution. And the second question about another assumption, you said that you assume independence between different sides, and you said, well, 100 kilometer, they're indeed independent. But what happens in fact is that you have wind farms in wind areas, it means they're quite close to each other, and then you cannot assume independence.
Mr. Chertkov, Los Alamos. Thank you. Thank you, Janusz. Very good questions. So now on Gaussian. Well, there are two ways to answer this question. I can argue as physicist, and can go into fluid mechanics type of discussion why statistics of turbulence is close to Gaussian, et cetera, et cetera. I'll not be doing that. It will not be perfectly Gaussian, certainly will be tails, and maybe will probably in some cases better. So now, however, answering to this question as a kind of data person, or think about Dan Beanstalk answering this question. So what Dan would be to say? He would say that that's what our out-of-sample test is about. So we stick to Gaussian because we know how to handle this thing analytically. However, you give me whatever distribution you want, and then I'll adjust parameters of Gaussian to fit it. And then I test, I just illustrate you that with certain choice of parameters that will be, basically in practice will achieve the same. So that's another answer. So now, it was independence question, right? So independence, you're absolutely right. So if wind farms are too close, and if you're talking about not 15 minutes, but an hour, I'm in trouble with this assumption, I need to do something else. Independence much tougher to deal with within our approach than this is relaxation from Gaussian to Weibull, etc. What I basically say is that wind speed is 15 meters per second, and we are talking about 15 minutes. There is no way wind will bring correlation from one side to another if there's 100 kilometers apart. So it is this assumption which I was making.
So what is the time?
So what is the time scale you are
considering? Yeah, so I'm talking about 15 minutes per, OPF repeated every 15 minutes. In 15 minutes, 15 meters per second, where will go? So it will be 10 kilometers, 15, but not 100.
Thierry Van Kutsem, University of Liège, Belgium. Two small questions to the second presenter, and this builds upon the previously raised questions. After a topological change, there is a delay to get new information, if I understand well, and that comes from two things. One of them is the window, the data window that you need to rebuild, because you have to clear your memory of the past evolution. And the second one is the CPU effort to compute singular value decomposition. Is this correct? So if so, it looks like the problem is that the larger the system, the more time it takes to get new information, while with all this distributed measurement, we could expect to have more local processing, let's say, which would avoid this problem of size. So my first question is more having a comment from you about this issue. And very quickly, the second one, after an event, there is a load response because downstream there are tap changers, etc., capacitors that can be switched, etc. That change seems to be, faster than the daily load change, but slower than the noise in the load. So can you accommodate this in your method? Because you explained in the beginning that you have to separate the slow trend from the fast one.
Okay. Could you clarify just one more time for the second question?
So the second question is, did you consider the effect of the load response, the load dynamics itself, yes, which is something that looks like faster than the daily load change, but slower than the random noise, random variation, random fluctuation of the load?
Barry, thank you for your comment and questions. My name is Jungmin Lim from Wisconsin, by the way. We have thought about the computation time, and I'm currently considering network decomposition to enhance the computation time for the very large network, and we currently working on that. And also, as you can see in the slide, if we use Rancher's or Arnold's algorithm, we can compute the first several singular values and vectors pretty quickly than the computing full SVD. And also if we use the rank one update characteristic of the PMU data matrix, we can also enhance the computation time as well. So we are still working on that and in that direction. Thank you very much for your question. And the second one, Professor and I have briefly discussed about the dynamics of the system. Is it we can capture that characteristic with our algorithm? And for now, actually, we have a chance to talk about the one of the industry, and they mentioned that if they consider the dynamic characteristic in the system, it still have very similar power flow response that I just showed in the graph, the ellipsoid shape in the Boltzmann magnitude and angle domain. So I guess I think that it is possible that we can still capture that the capacitor bank on and off characteristic in the system. Yes.
Ian?
Ian Hiskins, University of Michigan. Just a comment regarding the fourth paper. It's interesting to look at the reference list and note that every single reference was authored by the authors of this paper. Anyway.
They got into an infinite loop of quoting themselves.
I think they were in an infinite loop, and that's why they couldn't make it here. A comment for the second, that's probably better not to record on the in the discussion, actually. But anyway, a question for the second paper. There seemed to be an interesting connection between the technique being used in the second paper and Christine Chen's work yesterday. Now, they're doing slightly different things, but one would imagine that as the singular value gets closer to zero, as the system becomes more sensitive, that would also show up in her work, where the sensitivities are being calculated in a kind of similar manner from PMU data. I'm sure you can't immediately comment on the connection between the two papers, but I would encourage both groups to think about what are the connections between those two different techniques.
Okay, I see David's hand up. Hey, you'll get a mic. We have a minimum time arrival policy for the mics.
Okay, thank you. David Hill, University of Sydney. Just following Ian's comments, a couple of days ago I expressed some mild cynicism, I think, of the idea of going for the big data approach at the expense of where you've got models and, you know, our usual techniques. And this is just a comment, but it comes up here that we use singular values because the voltages and the normal measurements were not good indicators of the proximity of voltage collapse. So we went to singular values. You still have to calibrate these things. You still have to know that a numerical value of a singular value has meaning in terms of the distance to collapse. And I can't see how you can really do that without having some kind of associated studies, which is on the model of the network. And the way I would suggest we see that is we have offline studies, which help us get a kind of calibration, and then the online measurements supplement that or tune it up and help you make finer decisions. And so we shouldn't forget that we still have models there and we can study these and bring them into the picture as well, just as a general comment.
Okay, Marianne?
Thank you so much. It's Marianne Angel from Los Alamos. I think I have a follow-up to Bernie Lesieur and David Hill's comments. I suspect it's actually possible to discriminate between topological and voltage events because of the response of power flows in the networks, I suspect, are different for this kind of events. And since you have access and you can generate simulated data and you can label them according to the type of events you induce into your network, you can probably use statistical classification algorithm to to try to learn the kind of events you have. And also a similar algorithm, for example, it's implicit in your technique to select a threshold for when you decide that you detect an event in your network or not. And you can apply cross-validation techniques to select this threshold appropriately. So there are clearly ways to follow up on your work and bring statistical learning techniques to make the choices that are necessary to be quantified in a rigorous framework.
Okay, do we have, go ahead, Kostas.
Kostas Vurnas, NTUA. My question is for Misha Chertkov. I like the idea of using probabilities of failure, but we should take into account that if you have one line overloaded, then you have a cascade of events. So normally what we do is the n minus one thing. So I was wondering if you can put contingencies into your approach and then have a probability of an n minus one event. Of course, it will be more complex, but can be done? Can this be done?
Thank you, Kostas. It's Misha Chertkov, Los Alamos. I think I'll answer the same way Stephen Law answered this question. The same question was asked to Stephen. If you can put n minus one contingencies in his approach, and you just have more variables, more conditions, but it's not exponentially many constraints, yes. And in this way it's the same thing here. And especially this cutting plane approach, which allows you to basically add them as you need, those constraints, adding many constraints through n minus one will not complicate things. As far as cascading is concerned, it's of course much more difficult story. But supposedly this what we are suggesting is more or less for normal operation, however, under a lot of fluctuations which we're getting from renewables.
Kostas Vurnas again. I was just hoping to see this approach to have a n minus one followed with probability of having a failure. Thank you.
Misha Chertkov, yeah. Thank you for suggestion. We'll certainly do it. I don't think it is a problem.
How do you get those probabilities?
Well, probabilities are exogenous, probabilities of your events, of your wind fluctuations. But you just consider, instead of one configuration, which is your normal configuration, all those n minus one configurations, which additionally.
The problem here is one of independent or dependent events. And that's a sequence of highly dependent events which occur at the speed of light.
Well, I'm not discussing this situation. I'm discussing
break. That's the question which was asked because it's this cascading outages.
Yes and no.
The important issues.
Yes and no. So Kostas started from cascading, but then he said that usually we do n minus one, and that I was responding to n minus one, and I said that cascading is much more difficult thing, exactly because of what you just said.
Okay. Steve has a question.
Stephen Lowe from Caltech. I have a question for Misha.
You guys are ignoring all the other presenters over here. And given that Lushier was up all night and we have a presenter from Japan who hasn't been asked questions, after this, I'm only going to entertain questions for those other two guys, okay?
Okay, thanks for the last question. So I want to follow up on Janu's question as well, that about independence. So is it possible to look at extreme events where, in the case that you just studied, you assume everything's independent, and in the other extreme, you assume the variables are exactly the same everywhere. That is, the demands are everywhere, let's say in this local distribution circuit, the demands, if that is a random event, that every node in your circuit follow the same statistics. Not the same statistics, they are the same variable, basically. Same random variable, basically. One extreme, right? So it's one random variable. and then look at the effect, and then is it possible then to show that in a general case, if things are correlated but not the same variable, then you always fall in between the two cases.
Misha Chertkov-Losalma, thank you, Stephen. Yeah, absolutely agree with you. That's another approach. And actually, we reduce ourselves to Gaussian uncorrelated because it was simpler. But originally, we thought about using large deviation exactly along the lines of what you said. So in this case, you are actually not limited to correlations. But you need to have this exogenous forecast, right? Probabilistic forecast. But yes, it's very good suggestion. Certainly should be done and can be done.
Go ahead. The former chairman of IREP has a question. Glauco.
Glauco Taranto, FURJ, Rio. I think I have to be in the waiting list for the number two paper. So after your remark,
okay.
Put me on the waiting list because I don't have questions for the...
Go ahead. I ask your question. I mean, I have to be very nice to you because you sponsored such a beautiful event in Búzios last time.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, my question is for Mr. Lin, paper two. I would like you to comment on you show a plot, if I record, that show four events.
Okay.
When you compare the model-based and your approach. And look like that your approach did better in one of the switches. I would like you to comment on this, if you can, please. Do you know what I'm talking about, right?
Oh, you mean the very last slide comparing the...
Yeah, the last slide.
Double change.
Yes, detection. Yes. Yeah, the switching capacitor.
Yeah. That was detected by your method.
Oh, okay.
Could you comment?
In the model-based one, it shows up very slightly. Maybe you cannot notice that this big screen. It shows a little bit changes in Pavlov-Jacobian inverse. But since our algorithm subtracting the expected state, so it may give us more sensitive result than the largest single value of powerful Jacobian inverse. Is it answering your question, or do you want any more comments on that?
Yeah, it did, but I still didn't understand well. Yeah, but it's okay.
Do we have any other questions? Any other comments? If not, go ahead, Thierry.
Thierry Van Kassem, University of Liège, Belgium. Well, just a quick comment, and I'd like to have your feeling about the last presenter. So basically, the topic is how a distribution system can help solving transmission issues, basically, seen from very far. I guess that could be easier to solve a voltage problem than probably the one of restructuring that you have shown in your presentation. My feeling is that for solving voltage problem, an emergency signal sent from transmission could be really taken care of in active distribution network management. Would you comment on this possible extension, or do you have heard about the authors thinking of this?
Okay, Le Chiffon, I'm just presenting the paper, not with the co-author, but first of all, I will first pass along the information, the questions.
I don't think that works. That's there just for show.
My understanding of the paper that the author is trying to convey is that it's not a top-down approach, but rather it's a bottom-up approach. I think that's perhaps the key difference. You're trying to coordinate an active group of users, which could be dynamically changing over time, to manage congestion-related problems or voltage problems that you mentioned. That, I think, will also depend on the possibility of opening up a sub-transmission level, sort of a innovative market signals or tariff structures to accommodate that. So I think that's what the author was trying to promote, but I certainly pass along a question to the authors.
There's no
the sub-transmission markets.
Yes, that's they're trying to promote that.
They're looking for jobs in Portugal. They would like to develop some sub-transmission market operations, and I think it's a job creation program, just like the stimulus program was.
Well, then, just back to your question yesterday, I think one needs to think about ways to incentivize small customers. One possible way is to directly pass along the LMPs to the end user, but that's only one possibility. Is there any other possibilities? And what is the way to differentiate customers with different technologies? What is the way to differentiate customers of different preferences? I think that's what the author was trying to promote.
Okay, I don't see any hands up. I think everybody's ready for coffee. I'd like to thank all the presenters this morning, and we'll adjourn for 15 minutes. When the bell tolls, please everybody come in because we lock the doors.
Because this is what I